freedom is the right to tell what they do not want to hear. CNN, MSNBC, Fox News. Tired of the same repetitive government narratives? Then wave goodbye to the distractions and rhetoric of corporate media. For this is Anti-Media Radio.
But I want to get the language right.
The government is in trouble.
After all, a bunch of slaves! Bunch of slaves!
What we need in the United States is not violence and lawlessness, but is love and wisdom and compassion toward one another.
What's your definition of media?
And now, here's your host, S.M. Gibson.
My name is S.M. Gibson, and what have I subjected myself to for the past 2 hours with this debate? There's just a few minutes more here. It's winding down the nonsense, but this is Anti-Media Radio, your alternative to the BS that you're hearing on CNN right now, your alternative to what you're going to hear on Fox News about this debate. We're going to get down to the truth of what these candidates are talking about, the rhetoric, the nonsense. Joined, as always, in the studio, Mr. Shannon Madden. Shannon, how are you doing?
What's up, Mr. Gibson? How are you this evening?
My brain's about to explode.
Yeah, this is retarded. This is like two of the most retarded hours of television.
Well, I don't even know really what we're doing. Stick around as well. We are going to talk to the incomparable Mr. Derek Brose here in just a few short minutes to discuss everything that has been going on the CNN debate stage this evening. I don't even know where to begin.
I've got to throw this out there, and I made the point a moment ago when we were watching this debacle, that who are those other three people? I mean, really, you know, there's Hillary, there's Bernie, and then there's three random white dudes. You know, one of them kind of looks like, you know, Pat Sajak's dad. The other one kind of looks a little bit like, you know, kind of a thinned out grandpa monster. And you know, other than the Hillary and Bernie sound bites, I mean, pretty much they're there just to kind of kill time.
O'Malley, for those who don't know who the other three people on the debate stage
were. You mean you actually know?
I'm afraid that I do. Martin O'Malley's a former governor of Maryland. Jim Webb is a former senator from Virginia, and that guy looked like he was just, any second, there was just something horribly offensive going to come out of his mouth.
He kept it together.
Lincoln Chafee is the former governor of Rhode Island. And then, of course, you have Hillary and Bernie. I tell you what, before we even get into this, let me, as always, we like to start the show with a few stats that you
want. Well, we don't like to, but we're going to give you the stats anyway.
All right. The mainstream corporate media neglects. So far this year in 2015, there have been 922 Americans killed by police officers. There have also been 99 officers shot, or there have been 99 officers that have died in the line of duty so far this year. That includes 29 by gunfire, 26 by automobile accident, 16 of those by heart attack, and then the numbers go down from there. In the city of Chicago, with their strict gun control laws, of which that was a topic for the candidates tonight. Chicago somehow didn't make its way in there. But there have been 2,400 people shot so far this year and 408 killed in the city of Chicago since January 1st, 2015. And Saudi Arabia, 134 executions. Our great friends, head of the UN Human Rights Council, 134 executions. Okay, Shannon, let's just try our best to decipher the BS that I put myself through watching this. They asked Hillary Clinton.
I'm still amazed that you knew those other three guys' names, because, I mean, really, it was like they just, and I know they're actively running for president, yada, yada, this, that, and the other. Vermin Supreme is still running for president, too. I just need to throw that out here. Where was he during this debate?
He should have been right up
front. Out there glitter bombing Bernie is what he should have been doing, keeping it real.
They literally asked Hillary Clinton, okay, how are you, like, are you going to be different than President Obama? And she kind of giggles and laughs like, isn't it obvious? I'm a woman. I'll be the first woman president. And it's like, okay, that's cool. So it's like, what about your policies? Well, you know, I'm a woman.
Yeah.
So no difference. We're just going to keep the cycle going.
She used to work for that guy, didn't she?
I think so.
Sort of, kind of.
A little bit. Little bitch. There was no scandals involved.
Enacting his policy, making she was pretty much the mouthpiece of the rest of the world.
Yeah, and they like go on all night talking about the scare tactics of the Republican Party.
Yeah.
Which, that does happen. But they pretend like they've never done that. They're not involved in fear-mongering.
Well, and you might be right about that, because this current administration definitely needs to be freaking us the fuck out about what's going on over in Syria right now. We are quickly approaching World War III. Approaching World War III. And very few people are actually, like, waking up to that fact or even discussing it. It's like it's one of those little random news stories that keeps popping up. Oh, yeah, they're still fighting over that piece of sand. Oh, did you hear it's Columbus Day? You know, they're over there, you know, driving 4 million people out of their homes. But, hey, did you hear Justin Bieber has a new album out? You know, man, it's really sad. Russia's getting involved now, too. But, man, did you see that thing on American Idol last night?
Did you see where, speaking of American Idol candidates, Marco Rubio, he came out and was talking about engaging Russia to enforce a no-fly zone in Syria. Engaging Russia to enforce a no-fly zone.
Chris Christie is on record as saying pretty much, hey, if Russia doesn't get...
Let's go ahead and jump into the calls here. Area code 713, welcome to Anti-Media Radio. Tell us your name and where you're calling from this evening.
Houston, Texas.
Houston, what is what's on your mind tonight?
I only caught part of that Democratic debate on TV, and then I decided to go ahead and listen in. I found a radio station here in town that was carrying it. I missed a lot of the gun debate, but
Go ahead.
I was impressed with two or three of the candidates. But I will say that, to me, Secretary Clinton sounded like a puppet. She sounded like one of the Muppets on their new Muppets show.
I mean, that's what she is, basically.
She's the head Muppet.
Yeah, I mean, she's all about changing her, you know, she's changing with the wind. She's trying to come, you know, farther to the left on some issues because of Bernie Sanders, because you see that's where people are gravitating to. Who knows what she really believes, if she really believes anything. She literally just says, I believe whatever she thinks people want her to say.
Very correct. Very correct. Now, and see, the funny part is something I've been reading. I've been paying attention to this through Facebook and a couple of different links that I have that Obama has thrown her under the bus as far as her supposed server that she had on her private email account. And then Tony claims, oh, well, this was all a farce. The whole Benghazi investigation was simply just to degrade her and to try and drive her numbers down.
Has there ever been a Clinton scandal that wasn't their response, ever? It's always, this is some conspiracy just to hurt us.
You need to take your tinfoil hat off.
Yeah,
you know? Yeah, exactly. It's all about the mudslinging and attacking the poor Clintons. They're just some poor Southern folks that made good, and everybody in the world just wants to tear them down.
That's it.
They left a trail of bodies in their wake.
Yeah, go ahead.
Straight right now.
Can I say something about my background?
Yeah, please.
I grew up listening to NPR on the radio during the 80s, listening to the Iran-Contra hearings and listening to how the people covered for other people, everybody dumped it on the colonel. I can't think of his name at the moment.
Oliver North.
Poindexter had already gotten out of the realm. We already had another guy had died, so we couldn't ask him any questions. But yet it was so politicized, and somebody got brought up on criminal charges because of that. But yet when you turn the tables on another different situation, that it's going the other direction, that, okay, yeah, okay, so we were getting money because we let Manuel Noriega go to Quantico and we trained him and then we put him in a position in Panama, which, by the way, they wouldn't let me within 25 miles of, but yet I'm a U.S. citizen, but I don't know shit. But they turn this around, and they want to politicize this. That, oh, well, you're actually bringing up relevant points. You're simply trying to try. I don't understand how the system can change this quick in less than 20 years. I'm 46, and at one point, yeah, I actually had a regret when I voted for George Bush Senior. And I suddenly realized within 6 months, oh, crap, this guy actually ran the CIA, and we've got the guy on the other end of the pond who used to run the KGB, so we've got the two biggest spooks going head-to-head. That is nothing compared to what's happening right now with the inability of Obama to deal with a situation and to make comprehensive statements or even to back them up, considering what Putin's been doing running around Europe the last 3 years.
That's true, but you have to remember, too, that we have, okay, let's talk about what's going on in Syria right now. We've been funding one side of that. Russia's been involved with funding Syria since the 50s and arming them since the 50s. So that's not like that just, you know, is something that took place.
Whoa, dude.
Yeah.
We backed up the Shah of Iran.
Right. What does that have to do with this conversation, though? You see what I'm saying? Russia, they're
trying we put our money, apparently, on the wrong guy. Not necessarily saying that that was a wrong choice, but that putting the money on the Shah of Iran during the 60s and 70s and backing him up, that created a lot of problems because people started to realize it, not necessarily here, but in the Middle East. People realized that he was actually propped up, probably financially and militarily wise. Once the 79 Islamic Revolution took over, then everybody realized, oh, well, we can do the same thing, and they'll still give us money.
Right, but, okay.
I mean, that is definitely one side of it. I see your point. I definitely see your point. We also propped up, you know, at one point in time, we were very, very friendly with Saddam Hussein. I wouldn't say to the fact that we necessarily propped him up, but we were definitely favorable. You know, we were favoring setting him up in Iraq in his early days. And what a country he built. A wonderful, beautiful, beautiful place. That we went once he started pulling the crap that he did, and primarily most of it, and our involvement was, is that he didn't want to play ball to our standards. And you know, we have certain standards when it comes to dealing with situations in the Middle East, particularly now in 2015. Last time I saw Saddam Hussein, he was hanging around somewhere. I can't remember.
Yeah, he was hanging somewhere. I can't. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, I want to go ahead and bring in. Our guest to talk about these debates a little bit, Mr. Derek Brose, who works with the Conscious Resistance, among many, many other things, as well as a journalist with Anti-Media and Ben Swan's Truth Media. Derek, how's it going tonight?
Well, I was doing a little bit better before I decided to watch these Democratic debates.
Man, no kidding.
So, no, I'm doing good, man.
So, yeah, I mean, I still can't really even, I don't even know, like, what to decipher from this nonsense, because it's all just total BS. What did you come away with?
Yeah, well, first off, I got to ask, who are you backing in this? Who's your horse in this race?
Well, you know,
Shannon's a big Bernie Supreme guy.
As far as who I'm voting for, no, I'm just saying, who do you think the Dems are actually gonna prop up? We really don't know about the Republicans, even though when we've gone back and forth between Rubio and Bush. But I don't know. I mean, Hillary was the clear-cut favorite, but man, everybody's feeling the burn right now. What do you think, Derek?
I'm definitely not feeling the burn, but I do think that there seems to be two obvious possible scenarios that have been playing out in the Democratic Party, and that's either that you know, Hillary's going to be the nominee, and that's sort of been decided way ahead of time. And if that is the case, I think that Bernie, whether purposefully or just, you know, as a product of his general support from the people, is helping push Hillary further to the left. And, you know, if she does get the nomination, Bernie Sanders has already said he would endorse the candidate, whoever it is. And all of his supporters will then, you know, look, he moved Hillary a little bit to the left. She said she's against the CCP. She's talking about Black Lives Matter now and these different issues that they care about. But ultimately, of course, everything we heard tonight, it's going to be more the same. And the other thing that I'm a little bit more afraid of, you know, ultimately, I don't think there's many reason to worry. You know, we sort of pay attention to politics just to poke fun at it and sort of hopefully educate others who are still holding on to the system. But I think it's more of a terrifying thought that Bernie Sanders actually would win. And I know that maybe some listening, I'm sitting here looking at the Anti-Media Facebook page right now, and I see several people who follow the page but are still just, they support Bernie Sanders. And, you know, I'm not trying to speak for the Anti-Media. I write for the Anti-Media. But me as an individual, in my analysis, I don't think that there's anything new we're going to see from him. I think if you pay attention to what he said, and look past the rhetoric and the good things he's saying, because every time I point out something negative about Bernie Sanders, his people always come back, well, what about this? You're not mentioning all the positive things. But I'm not really here to mention
what about all that free candy he's going to be passing out every
What about that's, all the free candy?
That's the only thing that everybody seems to narrow down on when you try to talk to him about Bernie Sanders.
We ran a meme a couple weeks ago, Derek, about Bernie Sanders. And what it basically was is comparing the Obama supporters in 2008 to Bernie Sanders supporters today, and it's like they've got that same glaze in their eyes, like they've just been completely brainwashed.
Any day now,
like,
the government,
right? It's like, oh, it's different this time. It's like, yeah. But you said it was different in 2007 and 8, and seven countries bombed later. Is it different? And they're saying the same thing about Bernie,
Nobel Peace Prize winner,
right?
Barack Obama.
Well, you know what I think that we're going to see, and this is why I feel like a little bit more concerned with the Bernie thing, is because it's being pitched, and I'm of the opinion, and I'm not sure if you guys are on the same page or if the listeners are on the same page, but I'm of the opinion, again, based on my research, my analysis, my firsthand witnessing of the the end of the Ron Paul campaign and the way that they treated him within the RNC, whether you like him or not, I don't expect anything different from the DNC. So let's say that Sanders really is this, you know, whether we disagree with him on economics or, you know, whatever issues it may be that you have with him, let's say he is genuine and really cares about the people and wants to make these radical changes. There's no way that an outsider, a true outsider, will be allowed to succeed in that position. There's just too much control, and people have to accept that. I know it's a difficult thing to accept because that means your vote doesn't matter, but your vote doesn't matter. And they have that much control. So either he is, you know, really this grassroots candidate and he's getting this attention and they can't ignore him, but they won't allow him in, or he will get in and he will do so as a puppet. And that idea is a little bit more frightening to me because that means what we're witnessing right now and what we're going to witness now over the next year is this long game, faux grassroots campaign that is going to be pushed and pushed until, and somehow it's just going to be, everybody's going to be so amazed that they've been able to, you know, push Sanders to the front, and it's going to be sold as this people's victory, you know, and you know, he's promising all these good things. And I really think what I've already experienced with some of the Bernie supporters is they're so rabid about him that they take it personally and they get emotional whenever somebody attacks his positions. They see it as a personal attack on them. And I really feel like that could lead to a very dangerous climate where those who aren't for, you know, the health, the free health care, the free tuition, or just the expansion of government that his campaign and his presidency would bring, those who aren't for that would be seen as counter-revolutionaries, you know, of some sort, or would be seen as, you know, you guys are the ones holding us back. You don't want to get health care. You don't want tuition. You don't want to tax the bankers, you know. And again, he doesn't talk about jailing the bankers or, you know, today he said something about breaking up the big banks and this and that, but he's just talked about increasing their taxes, and this, it's not going to be anything radical. Also, if you listen to his answer on the war thing, they asked him about, you know, Syria, would you send ground troops to Syria? And he said, you know, he was anti-war, conscientious objector, and all these things, but he said that if America or its allies were threatened, then he would support putting troops on the ground. And, you know, maybe that sounds sensible. You know, you don't, I guess most people don't believe in pacifism, and especially not between nations, but I definitely believe in a non-interventionist strategy, and none of these people, Democrat or Republican, that are running believe in that, not even, you know, someone like Rand Paul. So think about who are the American allies. You have people like Israel, who is constantly violating human rights of Palestinians, and people like Saudi Arabia, who is possibly connected to 9/11 and crucifying people and whipping people and beheading people. What if those allies are threatened? It just means that the United States will be there to support them. So all we can expect from a Sanders campaign is more of the same when it comes to supporting these allies that activists who are paying attention understand. We do not need to be funding Israel. We do not need to fund Saudi Arabia and partnering with these nations. If we're ever going to, as a nation, you know, if you believe in a nation state, if we're ever going to take this country in a more positive direction, it's going to have to come from a place where we decide that morals and principles matter, and we're not willing to work with these, you know, horrible nations simply because we get oil from them or whatever the deal might be. But that's because those deals benefit the people at the top, not those of us on the ground level. And none of that's going to change, you know, regardless of who we put in the presidency.
Absolutely. And, you know, Sanders has already gone on record and said that he would continue to support Saudi Arabia. At least Corbyn over in the UK right now is coming out and speaking out against Saudi Arabia and all that stuff. Bernie Sanders is just like, yeah, keep on doing what you're doing. And I don't know if you caught this, because there's so many Sanders supporters saying, oh, he's going to stop the wars. He's going to stop the wars. He said tonight in the debate, yeah, I support what we're doing over in Syria right now. We should keep bombing. Like, he says he supports the airstrikes in Syria. It's like, what are these people talking about?
He also said that, and this is pretty much the same answer from that Rand Paul gave, and pretty much, I know people are just ready to make excuses for these politicians. I never understood this, and I made a rant about this on Facebook a while back, but just how willing people are to defend the politicians and these people who are supposed to be put in public office, and we're supposed to hold them accountable, we're supposed to be critical of them, and they're like, why are you attacking Bernie? Why are you attacking Rand Paul? They're our only hope for freedom, they're our only hope for liberty, or whatever. Rather than thinking about, well, think about the decisions that these people are making, these horrible people, and the people that suffer because of those sanctions, because of the funding of the Israelis, and because of all this stuff, this continuing war and spying and everything that they're supporting. Think about the people that suffer from that. So I'm not concerned about, you know, being critical or offending some politician who's supporting these horrible programs. He also, Sanders said that, you know, he would support the persecution of Edward Snowden. You know, he said he thought that he did some good things, and that's probably about as much as we can expect of any candidate.
We'll knock a year off
for
Senate, yeah.
But he said that, you know, he still should come back and face penalties. So, you know, this is just, there's, I think on the issues that really matters, and that was pretty much the only talk of, like, NSA spying. I mean, he did say that, okay, he would try to scale back the NSA, and, you know, I'm glad that he mentions anything that, you know, he says that's positive. I'm not here to take away from that, but what matters is what he's saying in between the lines, you know, and it just blows my mind that people are just once again falling for somebody who's coming and saying the right message, and the benefit they have this time, the Democratic Party and whoever's sort of pulling the strings behind the scenes, is that Sanders has a record where Obama didn't. So many people who got fooled by Obama are this time saying, no, he's different, see, because he actually has a record. Obama didn't, and we fell for it because we wanted to elect the first black president and because he was, you know, young and he spoke well. But this guy's old and white, and he's got a good record, and he's for the working class. He's going to do all the things he said. And if they don't support him, then they're thinking, well, I want to be the one to elect the first woman president. And that was another crazy thing that came out of it. Hillary basically just saying...
My jaw dropped when she said that.
Even though she was saying she wasn't saying that you should elect her to be a woman, she pretty much kept repeating that over and over. Well, as, you know, being the first woman, and you hear all the cheers and applause, and she's totally kind of play that aspect up. And one of the other real important points I want to make is that we have... These people, basically, to me, the biggest thing that sticks out is that they're all playing the partisan game, okay? Like, one thing that stood out, even though they would kind of take jabs at each other, they all repeatedly said, well, let's take a moment to recognize how much better our debate was than the Republicans. You know, at least we weren't talking about blah, blah, you know, just every time they could, they would take a shot at, like, well, at least everybody here on the stage is better than the Republicans. And so every single one of them is, you know, even Sanders, who has, for a long time, been like, well, you know, that's not my campaign. The people are going to talk about, we're going to talk about real issues. We're not going to talk about the BS or whatever. But even then, you know, he still was kind of taking jabs at the Republicans. It's a bigger issue than that. And so to me, it's just, again, mind blowing that we're this far along in 2016, and there's still people who don't understand that the two parties are nearly identical and that the whole thing is a farce. Like, I'm like, I thought we were all past this. This is like Awakening 101. Like, they're all the same.
And that's the scary part for me. It's not so much the politicians, because for me at this point, it's like, okay, I know this is what politicians are. I know this is what politicians do. The thing that terrifies me is the people that are still buying into it. And you kind of addressed this earlier about Bernie Sanders, but it's really with, you know, any candidate across the board. If you come across a supporter and you pick out one thing in their policy that you disagree with, you know, then you're just attacking everything. Like, they feel so attached to that candidate. Well, I agree with just everything they believe. I agree with everything. And they're there to be scrutinized, like you said. Their job is to be scrutinized. And when you scrutinize one thing, somebody's not going to think to themselves, oh, maybe they're making a point. All they hear is, you're attacking my candidate and my beliefs. How dare you? And it's that reaction that terrifies me.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and this is the thing, is that these people are basically, and this is one of the oldest tricks in the book, is getting people to identify with a team. You see it with sports, and there's nothing wrong with sports, but you see the same mentality with, you know, people identifying with their favorite sports teams and getting angry at other teams. And, you know, to me, it's like I can enjoy and sit and watch like a sports game or something, like a football game or whatever, and enjoy it for what it is. But there's also, I see others who will take it and attach, to me, it's like a really, some sort of deeper level where we attach to symbols and to this idea, like the team, and then we're against the other, you know, the other side, the other team, the other political party, etc. So as long as it's coming from their own political party or their own team, then they're okay with these hypocrisies, and, you know, they sort of allow the cognitive dissonance to filter out the things that don't make sense. But it's only whenever it's coming from the other side. And so it's so mind-blowing sometimes and saddening at the same time to see how obvious it is that people get sucked into these really easy traps and deceptions, and it happens so much. I mean, obviously, I don't think the majority of us really watch TV the most time. Like, or those of us who do watch TV, I feel like we use, you know, Netflix and the power of the Internet to choose what we watch on TV and to like filter out most of the propaganda and commercials, or at least as much as we can. And so it's weird to me to kind of step in and like watch this, CNN debate and just to see, I was like, wow, the circus is still going on. I don't pay attention to it that often, except for, writing articles and stuff, but it's just a trip, being around most people who are others who are kind of over this, these ideas and who see through right through it, and then watching it on CNN and knowing that this is being broadcast to millions of people who really believe that this is, like cutting edge, this is valuable information. When, to me, one last point I'd like to make before I head out in the next couple minutes is that none of these candidates, I had a friend say that Bernie Sanders talked about the Apache stronghold, and I applaud him for that as well, but in the end, none of these candidates are going to change really important issues that matter to me, and I feel like issues that should underpin what direction this country is going to go or what kind of accountability there will be at the U.S. government, and also learn from the history to show that the U.S. government doesn't give a damn, is that none of these candidates are going to make the situation better for American Indians. None of these candidates are going to, stop the theft of land that's happening by corporations and, Native lands and reservations that are being sold, or Native communities that are completely poor and broke. And it's all a result. I'm not asking for the government to come fix this or to give them anything, but rather just at the least, I think that these communities have, it's obvious these communities have been suppressed since the last 500 years, and everything that they're dealing with now and the poverty and all of that, the U.S. government, I don't know how to fix the situation, but absolutely there needs to be some way to fix the situation. And I don't hear any of the candidates talking about it, even if voting itself wasn't an immoral act, and even if the election wasn't rigged, they're still not talking about deeper level issues. It's all this surface level. Yeah, we're going to tax this. We're going to do this. We support this. I mean, it's all rhetoric.
It is. I mean, do you think the Federal Reserve came up one time tonight? Ben Bernanke's name came up one time. Did they mention the Federal Reserve? Not at all. Another thing, too, I think people get in this habit, and I know you got to go here in a second, but I know people, they get in this habit, they don't want to admit when they're wrong, even when they know they're wrong, because look at, okay, for Obama, people just forgave Obama and everything he did, and now kind of that, his administration's coming to an end, people can look back and go, okay, well, maybe it wasn't the greatest thing in the world, and the same with Bush, 2004, 2005, people were still just defending everything Bush did. And then finally towards the end, it's like, oh, okay, well, maybe we made a mistake. And, I don't know if it's people just really want to believe. They don't want to admit that they've been deceived. And finally, once it becomes kind of the popular theory, oh, this guy isn't what was right for the country, then they can see, okay, it's all right to come out and say what I've been thinking this whole time. And it's kind of this mob mentality.
No, absolutely. It's a total mob mentality. And that's what I was saying earlier about this. It freaks me out, really. It freaks me out, man, because the free candy has people excited. And it's from what I'm seeing and what I'm hearing, and really what's driving this campaign is that not only Sanders, but really any of these people, like throw it back to the other side, the Trump people as well, or any of the politicians that are really playing a role or just speaking for the money behind them, there's this hysteria that takes over people where, as we're saying, it's like they need their team to win. And you attack the team, they get a little crazy, they're ready to attack you. And if they win, I mean, I can't even imagine how the Sanders crowd would act if they were to win and to get into power, promise all these things, and if anybody dared oppose giving them their free tuition and pay raise and all these different things. And I'm not trying to diminish or at all or say that struggles and issues of oppression hitting communities that are
that's the problem though, Jared. That's the problem. That's how people attack people. When you say, well, maybe this idea is not going to work, all they hear is you hate poor people.
Yeah, and that's not, let's make that clear. I'm all for looking for economic justice and trying to, for one, that's why it's a good idea you mentioned the Fed, is because that's one of the things we have to do to remove if we really want to work on the underpinning issue of economic inequality. And this is, I try to talk to Sanders supporters about this, like, look, you can say you support this $15 an hour minimum wage, and, I understand that we need more money to keep up with, inflation and the rising prices. but they completely missed the fact that without the Fed and the central bank and fiat system that we have, the fractional reserve banking system that we have, that we wouldn't be dealing with a situation that, the, you know, we could have the dollar tied to something, and, you know, whether you want to say gold or silver or something new using technology, I don't know. I'm just saying we could have money that we could all agree that was going to be worth something rather than just creating this debt out of thin air, which is totally invalid and should not be recognized. And I advocate everybody to ignore the debt they owe to the government because they're all illegitimate. But, you know, so let's talk about that. Let's talk about, well, why is it that people need to keep getting higher wages? Because if we raise it to 15, it's only going to be a matter of time before we have to continue to raise it. Because if the issue of the Federal Reserve creating, you know, inflationary costs on the dollar, this debt that we are all basically paying taxes on, as long as they continue to do that, the dollar is going to continue to lose value, and we're going to need to keep raising the minimum wage. And that's not to say that we shouldn't find a way to deal with that, but if you know, you're striking at the branches while we're trying to say, guess what, the Federal Reserve is the root of this.
It's, or at like least somebody breaks their part. Leg. Yeah, it's like somebody breaks their leg and they want to put a Band-Aid on it. And you know, people don't realize, okay, because TV doesn't tell you that the problem is inflation, the problem is the central banks, TV says minimum wage will fix it, let's just do that. Again, the whole, like, it all feeds back into the propaganda, the mob mentality, whatever they hear over and over, that's what they believe.
Absolutely, yeah, and this is, you know, this is why we have to not, we have to be careful not to let our emotions take over. And I understand, I mean, like, it's, we're not really preaching a message of hope, although I would think that most of my work and those who understand my work know that I do focus on solutions and that there are a lot of solutions. But I think what we're really trying to get at is that the solutions won't be found, and I heard Bernie Sanders say this several times tonight, there is no such thing as a political revolution. That's not real. That's an oxymoron. You don't have a political revolution. You know, it's a farce. You know, there's no people coming in mass numbers and voting in somebody. It's just, and maybe in other countries that might be a possibility, but for the majority, the U.S. is usually helping manufacture these faux revolutions in other nations. So what makes anybody believe that this quote-unquote political, you know, cultural revolution that they think is happening in the United States or is going to happen under Bernie Sanders' campaign would be any more legitimate, you know? I think that's another area that people forget. It's like, we can look at other countries and be like, oh, look at these revolutions. They're being organized and orchestrated in these ways. These are not real. But if it happens here, then it must be real. This must be something that, because I'm involved with this. I'm on Facebook. I'm talking about it. This is a real revolution. What do you mean? And that's, you know, that's an important point to remember as well. But there's just not going to be a political revolution. Real answers are not going to be found in there. The answers that I seek are found in myself and in my local community and getting involved in that way, taking back the systems of oppression that we disagree with and a lot of the things that Bernie Sanders talks about that are legitimate. But instead of looking to the government to grow the government, which is a big part of the problem, not the only problem, but a huge part of the problem, I believe we should seek to find the answers within our own communities and create these alternatives to the state wherever possible. And it's not going to be easy, and it's definitely not going to be a quick fix. But that's what the politicians try to sell you, and it's a lie. They try to tell you that, you know, you can change things tomorrow if you only just vote for this one candidate, because they want us to believe that it can be that easy. But it's not going to be easy. And the sooner we accept that, then I believe the sooner people let go of politics will be on the path towards real freedom and creating a world that I think that all of us, as diverse as we are and as diverse as our ideas of freedom are, we can find a place that will be much more prosperous and free than the world we live in now under the government we have now. But that's going to take being willing to be honest and to recognize that the government is no longer and has not been for quite some time under the control of the American people. And that, in fact, government itself is likely not an idea that can work out in the end. You know, look at the history of the state and the government and tell me one where it's worked out beautifully, where the people haven't lost their rights or been enslaved over a period of time, where every empire hasn't grown, you know, and collapsed under its own weight. So we're just witnessing the growth of that in the American empire. And the sooner we recognize that and the sooner we begin to start building solutions outside of politics that will allow us to have a more free world in the now and in the future, then the sooner, you know, we're going to get past all this. So that's my little bit of advice on that.
Well, I tell you what, thank you so much for calling in tonight, Derek, and sharing your thoughts on everything. I think you hit the nail on the head that, you know, it's time for us to stop, you know, living in
Facebook politics or looking to a politician or looking to CNN and go back to our communities and go back to the people around us and you know, live our own lives and find our own solutions in our everyday lives.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on, man. I appreciate it, guys.
Yes, sir. You have a good
evening.
Thanks,
Eric.
Take it easy, man.
You know, three political revolutionaries of recent note that I can think of right off the top of my head are JFK, Martin Luther King Jr., Malcolm X. Whatever happened to those three guys? They were kicking some ass there for a moment.
JFK is a little bit debatable. I think, you know, he some of his stuff, he did have good intentions, but, you know, he definitely became immortalized after he got shot. He wasn't, you know, this perfect president. But at the same time, he was coming with a little bit different ideas.
Some way different ideas.
I tell you something that came to mind when Derek was talking. They treat politicians are kind of like weight loss products. And they tell you, oh, this new one is the latest and the greatest, and this one's going to work. You don't have to exercise. You don't have to do anything. All you got to do is get this product, and all your problems are going to go away. Mm-hmm. You're going to be able to fit into that into those clothes. You're going to look great. Everybody's going to love you because you just get this one product.
Try Bernie Sanders now for 30 days.
Yeah.
It's free.
Yeah. That's it.
For 4 years.
Diet Obama.
Yeah. Yeah, that's we've lost quite a bit with that diet.
But that's it. It's all a product. And he was talking about, you know, political revolution. You know, whether you're a fan of Ron Paul or you weren't a fan of Ron Paul, at the same time, that to me always did feel like it was a very organic thing. And because it was actual something from the people, look how the media treated that. Look how the establishment treated that. They threw that guy. They treated him horrible. The media talked like he wasn't even there. That's what happens when you get somebody that's really from the grassroots. They don't embrace them and put them front stage and give them half the time to speak in a debate. They make them like they're crazy and shove them off to the side. So, you know, again, people really, 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 I think people are awake to Hillary for the most part. If you're not awake to Hillary at this point, then whatever, you're a lost cause. Is that negative?
Well,
being that down and out?
She's still leading the polls with the Democrats, which basically means that, you know, when we talk about the, you know, mouth breather conservatives in this country, I mean, they're no different than the hardcore, you know, left wing, and, you know, it's all going to be about this one situation or that one situation, or, you know, we've got to focus on this one specific issue or this specific issue. And if you don't focus on this specific issue, like Derek brought up earlier, then automatically you're a part of the other. You know, I've discussed with numerous people about my displeasure about the Obama administration and their policies. And instantly I'm branded, well, you're a conservative, then you're just one of those mouth-breather Republicans. No, I'm not. I have just as much disdain for his predecessor and quite possibly whoever's going to succeed him, because, again, this deck has been stacked from the beginning. It's all Republican all the time. And you know, brace yourself for it. Like it or not, it is coming. And I'm not jazzed about it either, but I don't see any difference in what I just heard and saw tonight than the Republican debates we watched, well, a couple weeks ago.
Right. It's just different kinds of finger pointing, but it's all still finger pointing.
Absolutely. And nobody's really narrowing down on the issues. We hear about this comprehensive plan and this comprehensive plan. Well, let's hear about your comprehensive plan. And let's see how much it's going to cost. Let's see how much more pork is going to be thrown over here and thrown over here. Because, again, just like with Obamacare, and I've brought this up on numerous occasions, the what is now referred to as Obamacare was not the original bill that was set before Congress, authored by Obama and whoever else helped him draft that bill.
Speaking of, look, one of the people on stage tonight, Ron Paul, and Bernie Sanders helped Ron Paul with an audit the Fed bill, and Bernie Sanders helped go in and devour the bill, leaving it, you know, basically hollow. And you know, it ended up being better than nothing, but, you know, they tore it apart. Mm-hmm. They gutted the thing. And Bernie Sanders was a part of that. So this whole idea that
they it's a farce. I mean, it's an absolute farce.
But people need. Here's what you. This is why people. You say something about Obama, or somebody says, or you say something about Bush, and they're automatically you're Democrat, or you're automatically Republican. People need these simple boxes to define people, mm-hmm. because they don't allow themselves to think outside of the box, because the peer pressure of TV and the politicians and the establishment and the way that we're supposed to live and the way we're supposed to be.
Let's not discount, you know, family influences. My daddy was union. He voted Democrat his whole life, so on and so forth.
But it's still funded by the same. It's the same thing, though. Mm-hmm. And people need to be able to put a label on you, because that makes people feel comfortable. Okay, I can label you. You're either my enemy or you're my friend because of this one thing or this two things. It's like we're all human beings here on this planet. Get to know that human being. Don't look at them and go, conservative, Democrat, libertarian, communist, whatever. Get to know the people around you in your everyday life. Who cares about the people on TV? Who cares about me coming through your speakers? It's about you and the people in your life and the people around you. It's not about judging somebody that's walking down the street. It's not about labeling somebody. We have to get past that. That's what's got us in this problem. You're talking about bombing countries, whether you're talking about racism, whether you're talking about class warfare, everybody's scared. If your poor rich people are scary and they just want to see me die in the streets, if you're rich, the poor people are going to come up here and kill me. Everything's a divide. We're all human beings except for maybe Dick Cheney.
We'll get into that some other time. You know, but it really underscores the fact that the most powerful voting bloc, the voting bloc that has the largest amount of voters in it, is the voting bloc of people that are not voting. A vast majority of the American voting population is not going to the polls. They're not Republican or Democrat. They've just thrown their hands up and walked away from the whole farce altogether.
Now, how much of that do you think is genuine frustration with the system, or how much of that do you believe, especially in American culture today, is just pure apathy?
I think it's both. I really do. I think one kind of leads into the other. With people that are actually educating themselves and being informed, and, yeah, gosh, we know a lot of American citizens that are doing that right now.
Because I feel like there's a large percentage of our audience that's probably not going out and voting because they see the system that's been placed in front of them and the candidates that have been placed in front of them. And yet, our audience is informed. You know what's going on out there. You know these policies. You know who these candidates are. And you're not voting because you don't care or not because you're not informed. But at the same time, the people that are watching the Kardashians every night and they're not voting, that's not because they're upset with the system. It's because they don't know what's going on around them.
And we would prefer they didn't vote anyway. So
they are voting.
But they have a choice, and they will vote for whoever they thought was sexy enough tonight, or you will have some female voters that will vote for Hillary Clinton strictly because she is a female, just like what we saw with the black vote with Barack Obama. You know, it's just, I'm sorry.
I don't think that'll happen with Hillary, though, only because Hillary doesn't have, I don't think she has the luxury to say, well, I'm a woman, and if you don't vote for me, then, you know,
well, she
you're sexist.
She did play the sexist card, but she did basically
she can't really,
emphasize
though.
The fact, though, that she is the woman candidate. And so if you're a woman, you got to hang with the girls, you know?
It's so irrelevant because people know Hillary Clinton as Hillary Clinton. I don't think there's, you know, maybe there's just a few rednecks somewhere. It's like, I wouldn't vote her because she's a woman. 98% of the people that don't like her, 99% of the people that don't like her, is because she's Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
And they've, you know, she's been around for 20-something odd years in the public eye. She was on the board of directors at Walmart, a real wholesome company treating everybody right. Yeah. I mean, give me a break.
Yeah,
she's been involved in scandal after scandal after scandal after scandal. What has she done for this country? What? What's she done?
Made a fair amount of money.
Yeah.
That's about the size.
But what positive impact has she brought to anybody's life outside of her circle?
She's definitely had some impacts. Those impacts are still being felt over in the Middle East right now.
That's it. And nobody wants to recognize it. They want to believe in this pipe dream, and they want to believe in, again, this idea, if we just do this one thing, it's going to fix everything.
Mm-hmm. The comprehensive plan. Yeah.
Like, logically think that through. Like, somebody that says, well, we're going to have a woman president. That's going to be great. That would be cool. Not her. But at the same time, how is the sex of the president going to change anything? What's any of that matter? We need somebody's brain in there. They've all been pretty brainless for a while, as far as I can tell. Dick Cheney was heartless.
Yeah, this is true. And he's still around.
He is that.
He'll be around for a long time. I think I won't be surprised if I'm, you know, kind of nearing the end of my life cycle and Dick Cheney is still alive in some sort of capacity or another. Dark magic. Dark magic.
But did he have a boot on his head?
No. My boy Vermin Supreme, I think if instead of not going to the polls, I need to remain active. I need to get up when it comes voting day, dress in my Sunday best, make sure I smell good, I feel good, look good, pull right up to the door of the polling station, walk directly in there, hand them my voter ID or whatever is now required by the state of Alabama to vote. And then I'm going to walk in there and I'm going to pull the hammer down. It's Vermin Supreme, Supreme 16 Fear Boot.
That's what it's about.
I'm amazed that he hasn't picked up on that for his campaign.
He should.
That's my own personal. That's some of my finest work. My own personal slogan.
Supreme 16,
Fear the Boot. I love the dude, man. McAfee too, who we had a chance to talk with.
He says some right stuff. I'll be honest with you, he really does.
He comes with a little baggage. I mean, you know. His international policy in Latin America is...
Yeah, he's well-traveled. What do you want?
Very well-traveled, yeah.
He's well-traveled. That's what I see.
Right back over here. we're sitting here kind of joking about this, but, you know, we've been...
He's got better ideas than anybody that was on that stage.
Well, dismantling the United States government piece by piece is a great start for any president, I think. I can definitely get behind that. And again, both of the candidates that I just talked to, we've had the luxury of being able to...
I don't think McAfee wants to dismantle the government. McAfee just has sense enough to go, we're bankrupt. Like, literally, mm-hmm. We have no money.
Which he spoke about extensively.
He did. And, you know, whatever question he was asked, it's like, guess what? We don't have the money for that. You know what? He's right. No money. Mm-hmm. That has to be addressed. Not giving out this free thing or that free thing. We're broke.
Yeah, there's no such thing as free candy. Somebody's got to pay for the candy.
That's it.
Always. And, you know, ponies, however. I mean, that's nature.
Well, you know, Vermin Supreme is going to give out free ponies. But I tell you what, one thing that stuck out to me tonight real quick is when Hillary made the statement. They were talking about the Keystone Pipeline, and she said, I didn't have a position on Keystone until I had a position on Keystone.
Mm-hmm.
That was the most Clinton answer I've ever heard. It's like,
she should have done what Papa Bill would have done and stuck his thumb out. Then the little stick his thumb.
Like, what did that even mean, Hillary?
The half-pitch fence with the thumb stuck out. I'm sorry, that's one of the greatest political gestures.
When Bernie gets us free college and we can all go to college for free, can there be a class on why Hillary Clinton said that? And what did that mean?
Well, and again, free college to me would probably kind of be like the free public education we have now. So we're going to have Common Core College.
We've got the number one high schools in the world, right? Because of the government, you know.
No.
No?
No, we don't, actually.
We don't?
Particularly in mathematics.
So we should give the...
That might be why we're so broke. We can't do math. It's just that simple. That's it. We just figured it out. We forgot to carry the one, that's all.
I think you just figured it all out.
Well, if I could have had some of that free college, though, I would have learned how to carry the one. Common Core College for everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't even know carry the one, I don't know. I don't know what that means. I just want free college, Bernie. Uncle Bernie. It is. He should run as Uncle Bernie. I like that.
Oh, now, if he ran as Uncle Bernie, I don't know. I might give him the second thought. Vermin Supreme versus Uncle Bernie. I mean, I don't know. You know.
I like Weekend at Bernie. That's a great movie.
Uncle Bernie's that guy who will tell you the dirty jokes. So like, hey, hey, come here, come here, come here.
No, he is.
Don't tell your mom this. I'm going to tell you a joke.
So, yeah, we've basically come away with everybody running is, you know, not worth the salt of anything they say. We have figured out that math is the problem.
Absolutely. Didn't carry the one.
That's it.
We're probably only like
you're still voting for Vermin Supreme.
We're probably only like what, $11 or $12 billion in debt instead of trillion. That's what I mean, really, I think we need to take. And if we could audit the Fed, we'd know this. I mean, you know,
there's not going to be any of that.
No, there won't be ever.
We just got a couple minutes here. You were out last Thursday, but I know you've heard.
God, man, I'm still sick. I miss this show. For all of our listeners, if you did not listen to last Thursday's show, please, please go check out the archives.
There's actually a story up right now.
UCY on YouTube. You've got to hear it. Then there is a story up on the site right now.
It's got the link inside of it.
Got to hear this interview. This guy is... Wow, I wish he was up there. That would have been great.
You live in Florida. He is running as U.S. Senator for the Libertarian Party.
Yeah.
Augustus Sol Invictus. A little unusual.
He's a lawyer.
He is.
Just like Hillary Clinton.
Just like Hillary Clinton.
I got tickled when I was...
I don't think he's on the board of Walmart.
Though. No, no, he's not. He's not on any board ever, anywhere.
He was, actually. He got kicked off. That's true. He was on. He was like on the education board down there or something. But yeah, he was on a couple boards, and then he was no longer after some things.
I think he just needs to go. He needs to go full balls on and just run for president.
He probably will.
I don't see a reason why not. I'm pulling for the guy. I don't know. There's not really a state I hate worse than Florida. Florida's cool in some spots, but I lived down there for a stretch, and no, thank you.
Against every place pretty equally.
Seattle was cool.
Yeah.
I like Seattle. Their bars are really uptight, though.
A little bit.
And their bowling alleys, too. That's another story for another episode.
Well, I tell you what, we didn't get to talking about Martin O'Malley very much, or Jim Webb, or Lincoln Chafee.
Who are those guys?
They were your friends that were running there.
Ain't my friends. I didn't see any of my friends on that TV show.
You loved them.
That was one of the crappiest TV shows ever. If you're going to invite me over to watch TV, put some Sopranos on or something.
I mean, this makes sense that we're just kind of running in the dribble talking about all this because that's what the debates were. Like, I just...
Pointless. It's absolutely
it
pointless.
Is. And that's where my mind went. Watching that for 2 hours, that's where my brain went.
Mindless entertainment that has some really serious negative implications on what happens to this country for at least the next 4 years.
Yeah, because there's so many... Like, every episode we come in, I'm like, boom, we're going to talk about this. We're going to talk about what's going on in Syria, going on in Yemen, Saudi Arabia. Everybody knows can't shut up about that. I watched that crap for 2 hours, and I'm just like, I don't know what's going on in the world anymore.
Yeah,
Your
IQ probably went down about
a good 8 points.
I guarantee you that my IQ went down at least 12 points during the Republican debate. But at least they had Trump on that one. That's a good show. Anytime Trump appears on TV, it's going to be at least entertaining. It's not going to be worth a shit, but it's still going to be entertaining.
Yeah, I mean... Both debates. You just kind of feel dumber for having observed them.
That's all we get, man. That's all they're going to spam feed us.
Join Nick tomorrow night. We'll be back on Thursday.
We'll do a real show next time.
We'll try. This is SM Gibson, Anti-Media Radio, out. I'ma let them know through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo.